An elderly hunt follower died after falling over and hitting his head in a collision with a cyclist, an inquest was told. Richard Winters of Melton had an unusually thin skull which contributed to his injuries. Mr. Winters was among hundreds of people making their way to watch the beaver hunt in Longclawson on December the 15th. The 82-year-old sustained fatal head injuries after stepping into the path of a cyclist just after 11 a.m. He was taken by air ambulance to Nottingham's Queen's Medical Centre, where he died later that day. The inquest at Loughborough Coroner's Court heard Mr. Winters suffered multiple fractures to the back of his skull after falling backwards. Forensic pathologist Francis Hollingbury, who carried out the post-mortem examination, said the back of Mr. Winters' skull shattered into several pieces. She said there were multiple fractures and signs of bleeding and bruising on the brain. She said Mr. Winters' skull was quite a lot thinner than she would have normally expected to see. It measured 1 millimetre at the side of his head. A normal skull would measure 4 millimetres to 5 millimetres. The skull thickness at the back of his head was 3 millimetres, compared with an average thickness of 1 centimetre. Miss Hollingbury said, "I believe this contributed to the extent of the head injury. A skull fracture in itself doesn't cause someone to die, but because the skull was much thinner than normal, the force of the impact from the fall caused it to shatter." The cyclist, Anthony Palmer, told the hearing he had been riding home from work along Hose Lane towards Hose when the collision happened. "It's a road I know well, and there were many people about," he said. "There were cars parked on the right-hand side and pedestrians walking on both sides. All of a sudden, a person, who I later found out to be Mr. Winters, stepped out in front of me. There wasn't enough time for me to react, brake, or avoid him. I wasn't riding very fast. It was slower than normal because I was overtaking horses. I went over my handlebars and rolled down the road. I think I struck him as I went over the top. I got up and saw he was unconscious. Someone called an ambulance and I put him in the recovery position." Crash investigator PC Michael Hinton of Leicestershire Police's Serious Collision Unit said the weather was dry but the road slightly damp. He said Mr. Palmer's 12-speed racer was in good working order and physical evidence and witness statements corroborated his description of events. Coroner Trevor Kirkman, recording a verdict of accidental death, offered his condolences to Mr. Winters' widow Jo and his family. Mr. Winters, who was known to friends as Dick, worked for solicitors Oldham and Marsh and Son for about 50 years until he retired in 1995.
As Kate McCann prepares to mark Madeline's 10th birthday, she has spoken about forgiving her daughter's abductor. The 45-year-old from Rothley will acknowledge the day with presents and a party next month, as she does every year. "There is a part of me that has to do it," she said. Madeline, who was taken from a holiday apartment in Praia da Luz, Portugal, in 2007, would be celebrating her 10th birthday on May the 12th. Instead, there are 6 years' worth of gifts waiting for her. Kate, who has devoted her life to finding her daughter, said she would never give up the search for Madeline and revealed she has even contemplated forgiving whoever abducted her little girl. She made the comments in an interview in The Telegraph this week. "I think I could probably forgive Madeline's abductor, whatever the circumstances," she told The Telegraph. "I don't know whether it's simply because I'm stronger or because there's no benefit in not forgiving someone. I can't change anything, and I don't want to be eaten up by hatred and bitterness. Maybe there is an element of pity. What kind of person could do something like this? But of course, forgiveness will always be easier if there is remorse. Marking Madeline's birthday is one of the ways Kate and the family have kept the youngster's existence alive at home. There are photographs everywhere. Her room is as it was on the day after the family left for Portugal. That was the room she left, and it would be familiar to her, said Kate. It would be hard to dismantle it. Speaking to the Telegraph, Kate also described the first time she dared to leave Sean and Emily, Maddie's siblings, alone in the car while she paid for fuel. The normal act was something which took a great deal of courage, she said. It was the first time in 6 years I have been able to do that. I was very conscious of what I was doing. I left them behind for a few minutes, but all the time they were in view. They used to protest when I took them inside with me to pay, though they knew it was, as Sean once said, because someone might take me. The McCanns will continue the search for their daughter until they find her or conclusive evidence that she is dead. Kate said, as there is nothing to suggest Madeline is not alive, we have to keep looking. We all know there are cases of missing children who have been found alive years later. Kate is running the London Marathon this weekend for the Missing People charity, whose website is www.findmadeline.com.
Tributes to life work of former Lord Mayor Phil. Friends and colleagues have praised the life and work of a former Lord Mayor of Leicester who has died at the age of 74. Phil Swift was a member of Leicester City Council for 20 years, representing the Castle Ward from 1983 to 2003. He was Lord Mayor of the city during the 1999 to 2000 civic year. Born in the Belgian Congo to missionary parents, Mr. Swift was raised in Wales and Scotland before moving to Leicester to join an uncle, author Eric Swift, in the mid-1960s. A qualified bricklayer, he worked in a variety of trades, serving as a representative of the National Union of Hosiery and Knitwear Workers for 8 years and as a health and safety representative for 6 years. He joined the Labour Party in 1980 and was first elected to Leicester City Council in May 1983. During his year of civic office, Mr. Swift raised more than £100,000 for the Leicester Children's Holiday Centre. He also hosted civic receptions at the Town Hall for the successful Leicester City and Leicester Tigers teams. Lord Mayor of Leicester, Councillor Abdul Osman, said, "I was devastated when I heard the news. He was a very good man and a dedicated councillor for his ward. He was also dedicated in his work as Lord Mayor, and he helped raise an absolutely fantastic amount for the Leicester Children's Holiday Centre. I remember attending events with him during his appeal. It's sad to lose a good friend and colleague who I worked with for about 14 or 15 years. He is a great loss to our city." Former Councillor Colin Hall, a close friend of Mr. Swift, described him as a passionate campaigner for social justice who gave exceptional service to his community. Leicester Children's Holiday Centre Chairman Jim Roberts said, "I knew Phil very well. He was a good friend. He was always a good friend to the charity and felt very strongly about the work it does. He was a good-hearted socialist who tried to help as many people as he could." Mr. Swift died at Glenfield Hospital on April the 11th after a short illness. His funeral will take place at Gilrose Crematorium, Leicester, at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, April the 30th. His family have requested any donations in his memory should be made to Leicester Children's Holiday Centre, either by cheque to Shaftesbury Hall, 1 Holybones, Leicester, LEI 4LJ, or online at http://www.justgiving.com/Mablethorpe.
Portillo tracks down history of the Great Central Railway. Train enthusiast and former MP Michael Portillo has been visiting stations along the Great Central Railway as part of a BBC series on the rail network. Last weekend, steam locomotive, the King Edward II, transported the former politician and presenter between Rothley and Loughborough. He was filming an episode of his series Great British Railway Journeys, which will air in January. Mr. Portillo, who was at the Loughborough Great Central Railway, the GCR station, for about 2 hours, was accompanied by a crew of about 5 people. GCR General Manager Richard Patching was interviewed as part of the Rothley to Loughborough episode. He said, "I'm usually a bit apprehensive about that sort of thing. I don't really like doing interviews, but Michael couldn't have been more personable and pleasant. Even when he wasn't on camera, he was charming. It wasn't just something he turned on and off like a light switch." The former politician was filming for about 2 hours. He was given the station master's hat and whistle and spent time walking up and down the carriages behind the King Edward II punching tickets. "He had tea with the ladies in the tea room at Loughborough too and spoke to the driver," said Richard. "It's only right that the Great Central Railway should feature in the series. It's a very popular line and the only double-track heritage railway in the country." Richard said the line attracted more than 100,000 people each year from all over the world. "It's a magnet for tourists," he said. "And we have about 500 volunteers who dedicate a lot of their time to working on the line, on the trains and at the stations." The Great Central Railway was constructed in the 19th century and was closed in 1969. Steve Crump, volunteer project leader on the Mount Sorrel Railway Project, a scheme to reconnect the Mount Sorrel line to the GCR, said, "I think Michael's series is excellent. He encapsulates the romance of a bygone era, which is what the Great Central Railway is really all about. It's about harking back to an age which we've lost, and it's that which attracts people." The Mount Sorrel Railway was launched 5.5 years ago and includes more than 130 volunteers. The line is expected to be reconnected to the main GCR later this summer. And the programme that was being filmed, The Great British Railway Journeys, will air on BBC Two in January.